If you took the time last night to watch the State of the Union, you were a witness to the darkest and most divisive State of the Union in the history of our nation.
Some would argue unprecedented.
We talk about Biden's State of the Union, a new rule in New York that's deploying the National Guard, and France enshrines abortion into their constitution. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser here with you, making our triumphal return to the Facebooks and the YouTubes. This is our third State of the Union recap show ever, which is says a lot about where we are in terms of longevity.
All of them have been...
All of them have been Joe Biden.
All of them have been terrible.
Yeah.
That's what I was going with, but you know.
If I could give you a quick recap, the State of the Union is bad. There's a lot to get into from this State of the Union. First of all, I know some people think because we live in an age and a time where people think what we've always done is inherently bad. And that spreads to everything. That spreads to religion, that spreads to sports. I'm looking at you, college football. Like, we believe that everything we've ever done is bad, and because we've always done it, it naturally needs to be changed. Change, just for the sake of change, is not progress. One would argue, it's just change. And so I enjoy watching the State of the Union, Mitch, because we get to actually delve into the history of this nation. By the way, Friday, March 8th, year of our Lord, 2024.
You thought
I was going to forget.
I was waiting because I was like, I've got it. I finally got Hail to the Chief, ready to go.
I enjoy, first of all, nerd, I enjoy when they say, Mr. Speaker, the President's Cabinet, and then trying to guess all of them.
Because
I'm a weirdo.
There were several awkward moments last night. The one that was like really awkward right out of the gate, except for like 25 minutes to get to the stage. Actually, it was about 10. Was normally the Speaker of the House introduces the President once he gets to the dais.
Typically.
And last night, Biden jumps right into it. Johnson... They actually had to send the guy
to pull
the mic down, and I texted you immediately. I was like, he forgot that.
Listen, man.
He was just ready to get
when
to
you're
it.
Hopped up on amphetamines, you got to go.
Hey. Better than Coke. Ask Hunter.
But one of my favorite moments is, you know, there's something to the president entering a room.
There's something
to the honor bestowed upon the office.
Most definitely.
There is something to that. And even though I disagree with this man on literally everything, I don't think we could find common ground on any political issue. I don't think there's a one. And I would love the chance to speak with him one day, and maybe we could find one. But there is still, like, when they announced Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Don't you put that voodoo on me, Ricky Bobby.
And he comes out, and everyone claps, even those who disagree with him. There's still a moment of...
We honor the office.
This is my country. This is my president, and I pray for his success, because his success is my success and our country's success, and I want us to be successful, and I want God to bless us. So there is a bit of, this is good. This is what's right about America. The president's coming in. He's not a demagogue. He's going to speak to the American people. He's going to tell us what's going on. He's going to tell us how he's going to solve it.
Be honest with you, that was the only part of the speech or the night where I thought, oh, yeah, we're America. Because much everything else was a dumpster fire.
Because it quickly became a dumpster fire.
And I'm not saying that just because it's somebody I disagree with, or I'm a partisan hack, or anything like that. You go watch the speech, you go watch what he says, and tell me that it's the America, not just that I grew up with, but it's the America that we all love and care for. And if you watch President Biden's speech last night, and you say, that's the America that I want, please, I welcome you to email me, Mitch@palmettofamily.org. That's Mitch@palmettofamily.org. And I'd love to have a conversation with you.
The speech lasted about an hour-ish, a little bit more than
Shorter than most.
Shorter than most, longer than what I thought he'd go. We're at a point in American history where we look at the president and our ceiling and our floor for him is don't fall asleep, don't keel over, don't drop. Like, that's his floor.
Which his party has to love, because that is such a low bar for a standard of success that if he gets through the speech without mumbling and fumbling.
Too bad he like did do
45
that.
Words, which I
he
think.
He invented some new ones.
Yeah. Well, Covfefe.
He promised. So, he Well, and Trump leans into that.
Totally.
So he's President Covfefe. The speech begins, Mr. Speaker, Madam Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans. In January 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation. Immediately, right off the get, we have now been shoved
into war.
Into war. Like, he shoves us into war in the first sentence, comparing this time in our history to when Franklin Roosevelt actually said, we need to go to war because Hitler's on the march.
A date which will live in infamy.
Hitler was on the march, war was raging in Europe. Now, the comparison there is Trump is on the march, war is raging in Europe. Like, that's the comparison he makes.
Which, I'm going to make a few correlations to multi-front wars today, so thanks.
He then goes on with Ukraine. What's interesting is Alexei Navalny's wife was supposed to attend the State of the Union.
She was busy speaking at a daycare.
First Lady was supposed to attend as well,
but she was speaking
to an orphanage, which is interesting because Alexei Navalny had the same belief as Vladimir Putin that Ukraine was part of Russia proper.
So on this side of Jill would have been Alexei Navalny's wife.
Widow.
Widow. Yeah. And then on this side would have been Mrs.
Zelensky.
Zelensky, assuming.
Awkward.
That, yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
That wouldn't have worked. So they're not going to do that. Immediately, President Biden begins to tear into President Trump. I think he mentioned former President Trump 19 times in his State of the Union, which tells me you're very scared of him.
He never calls him by name.
My predecessor,
the former president.
The guy who's the same age as me. Yeah. He went there. He also congratulated Sweden.
Which, just to that point, going back, not to Sweden, you know, God bless all of you Swedes out there. That should be a clarion call, a wake-up call to all of us. They're both the same age. And yes, one has slightly better mental acuity. Maybe much better mental acuity.
I'll tell you this. I never had to worry about Donald Trump making it through a speech. I never had to worry. I don't have to worry about Donald Trump making it through a speech. I worry about him going off a prompter.
Yes.
I don't have to worry about him. But in a State of the Union, go back and watch his States of the Union.
They were good.
State
of the Union addresses.
There you go. Thank you. I didn't know, because sometimes you have the Attorney General and the Attorney General. Yeah. I love it. But yeah.
Yes. In his addresses to the Congress on the State of our Union.
There you go. Nice.
He was always presidential. He couldn't get through a speech like an army. He couldn't get through a speech.
Yeah, he could. He did multiple times. Go back and watch his State of the Union in 2019.
If I write his speech,
he stuck to that speech every time at the State of the Union.
At the State of the Union.
He knew. And I've given him a lot of grief on this show.
Like,
and
Scissorhands to a pile of paper, though, with every other speech.
I've heard from all of you. You disagree with me on a lot of things when I talk about the former president, and that's fine. But I will stand here, and I will tell you, I never had to worry about that man not giving a good State of the Union or a very important speech when it came to taking out a terrorist or taking out
al-Baghdadi,
bombing Syria.
Is dead.
Yeah,
he cried like a dog.
Yeah, he died like a dog in the street. Yeah.
He was crying.
Good.
But Britt Hume said it best last night when he said, "This is the easiest speech the president will ever give. It is set up for the president to succeed." It's that.
But then it's what you say. And I remember on multiple occasions, inaugural addresses, acceptance speeches, you would get a clip from CNN, and Van Jones would say, this speech is a whitewashing of America. It's one of the darkest speeches in our history. Within 10 minutes, Joe Biden talks about January 6th as if it just happened. History is watching. Well, just like history watched 3 years ago on January 6th, insurrectionists stormed this very Capitol and placed a dagger at the throat of American democracy. No, they did not.
Are you number talking about one, the guy with the crazy Viking helmet?
Number one, crazy Viking horn hat guy and guy who sat at Pelosi's desk did not almost kill American democracy. First of all, we don't have a democracy.
Come on.
Secondly, guess what happened? They all left by their own will or because they were arrested. And then guess what happened? Congress went back into session and certified the election. The very thing that you guys are saying you won't do if Donald Trump wins. He talked about remembering the oath of office. And he said, here's the simplest truth. You can't love your country only when you win. Wow. Is he speaking to Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? Or John Kerry?
Or a myriad of the...
Or Michael Dukakis.
Yeah, see, now, I'm not going to go into...
History is watching another assault on freedom. He immediately jumps into, listen, the Democratic Party, and we are a nonpartisan organization, but I'm going to call balls and strikes. You ready for me to call balls and strikes today? The Democratic Party at large is a death party.
Oh, they are the leaders of the cult of death.
It's a death cult because they celebrate abortion, and then they are now tying IVF to abortion, which is crazy because on one side, here's why. Your feelings about IVF, my feelings about IVF, your feelings about IVF, all of that aside for just 1 second.
Sure.
The original purpose of in vitro fertilization is to create human life when two people, man and woman, in the bonds of marriage for life, cannot procreate on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Thus placing value on the human life. Now, when these places do things that don't value the embryonic life, then we have problems. I have problems with balls and strikes. I have problems with couples that aren't men and women married as God designed using IVF. I believe that's purchasing people. Again, we can have that conversation later. IVF's purpose is to value human life. You cannot do that and then support abortion, which devalues human life and ends human life. He talks about LaToria Beasley, a social worker from Birmingham. They welcomed a baby thanks to IVF. She was scheduled to have a second child using IVF, but of course we have the Alabama Supreme Court decision. He doesn't mention, because it would be bad politics, he doesn't mention that the governor of Alabama, whether I agree with her or not, just signed a law that protects IVF. Because he can't mention that. Because that's antithetical to the idea that Republicans hate women, Handmaid's Tale, we want you in the house, barefoot, pregnant, and washing clothes in the wash bin. That's his view, and that's the view he's sending to America. Like most Americans, I believe Roe v. Wade got it right. Whoa. Most Americans do not believe that.
This is where he crosses the line.
But my predecessor came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He's the reason it was overturned. And look at the chaos that has resulted. Yes, the chaos of more babies being born. Oh, geez.
He's talking about the Federalist approach.
Joining us tonight is Kate Cox, a wife and mother from Dallas. When she became pregnant again, the fetus had a fatal condition. No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
And he can't say baby either.
And by the way, Mr. President, fetus is Latin meaning offspring. Nice try. The fetus had a fatal condition. No, it didn't. It had trisomy 19. There are thousands of children born with trisomy 19 who are living a life. Now, whether you believe that life is valuable or not is on you and your own soul. But we're championing a woman who left her state. Congratulations, you left your state to go kill your child. What do you want, a cookie? But no, we're going to invite you to the State of the Union as an honored guest of the most powerful man in the free world. Now, in its decision to overturn, this is the moment of the night. We have this clip. We have this clip. This is the moment. When this happened, I turned to my wife because I inflict this upon her watching these things. When this happened, I turned to my wife and I said, I cannot believe he just did that.
This is the part that I say, and I say it on purpose, is unprecedented. Not unprecedented. Yes, that too. But this is antithetical. When we talk about people not respecting the office of the president, Mr. Biden, President Biden, remember the office that you hold.
Here's President Biden. Shortly after that comment about abortion, here's what he says.
And with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you've brought about that.
That was an absolute threat to the justice. And these are the same justices on the court, mind you, that have had people outside their homes saying they're going to murder them. And he did nothing. He did nothing. President Biden has zero balls and strikes today, ladies and gentlemen. President Biden has zero respect for the institutions of this country. He has zero respect for federalism. He has zero respect for the separation of powers. That's why when he tries to cancel student loan debt and the Supreme Court says, nope, can't do that, he says, they told me I can't, but I did it anyway. Insert Donald Trump saying these things and everyone will be having a meltdown today. President Biden literally looks at the Supreme Court justices, the ones that were there, John Roberts, Sotomayor, Kagan, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and former Justice Kennedy. All of them were there. And he says, you have no idea what you've done. Meanwhile, if you saw that clip, if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you see Chuck Schumer in the back. Remember Chuck Schumer? You've unleashed the whirlwind. You remember that? These people are insane. These people are despicable. And I'm serious when I say these things. Balls and strikes today, folks. President Biden continues. He blathers on and on and on. He then says that the president, his predecessor, failed the most basic duty. Any president owes the American people the duty to care. What? What? But, I'm not electing a babysitter, sir.
Yeah, but that's a ridiculous notion. The guy that was the president before me, that held the House before me, he let it go to waste. He let it go to pot. And you know what? He doesn't care about you now. Because the quiet part out loud is, his predecessor is going to be his successor if he's not careful. That's all he's saying here. This was a political hit piece.
It's a campaign speech.
Yeah.
The State of the Union should never be a campaign speech.
It almost always is. At least for, if not for the midterm, for the presidential. Every time.
He then says that 15 million new jobs have been created in just 3 years. Fact check. Fact check. There was a thing that happened in 2020 where all of you guys freaked out over a cold and we shut down a bunch of businesses. When those businesses reopen and people go back to work, that's not creating new jobs. The federal government and the state government never create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs, just government jobs. 15 million, sir? You can't start a parade, jump out in front halfway through the parade and lead the parade and say, look at how much I led this parade the whole time. He then says unemployment is at 50-year lows. That's incorrect. That's incorrect. The unemployment rate right now across all demographics is higher than it was under President Trump pre-COVID-19. That's just a fact. I could keep going here. Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%. That's without core inflation. That's without fuel and food, which are the two most important things. Lie after lie after lie after lie, and you're supposed to believe it.
Violent crimes down at all-time record lows.
Tell that to the family of Lake and Riley. Tell that to the family of the woman who was brutally assaulted in Virginia.
Time out. Lakin?
Okay, I don't want to make fun of his stutter because he misspoke. I'll give him credit on one thing.
He did say her name.
And he said that she was killed by an illegal, which that upset a lot of Democrats, the saying that no human is illegal.
And in case you're wondering, if you hadn't heard, which I'm pretty sure you have, she was killed in Athens, Georgia.
Which is not on the border. Well, it's near the border of South Carolina.
It's near the border of the Atlanta airport.
Yeah.
Athens, Georgia, an Augusta University medical student. I know that's kind of weird. In Athens, Georgia. Augusta University is the Georgia Regents Medical School. This is... Now, did Marjorie Taylor Greene cross the line?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean...
I'm never a fan of elected officials heckling the president during a State of the Union.
What about yours?
I disagree with that then.
I don't know that he started it. He reinvigorated it. Because there was a time in American history where tit for tat, back and forth.
We had a guy beat another guy with a cane in Congress at one point.
We had a lieutenant governor shoot the editor of the state newspaper.
Right down here on the corner of the street. The point is, I'm not necessarily okay with it. At the same point, I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to do this so you can then send out an email after to try to fundraise.
That's exactly it.
I get it. It's fine. He goes on, middle class built this country and unions built the middle class. Guys, if I can just be frank with you again, balls and strikes today. Joe Biden doesn't represent the middle class. He doesn't. I'm sorry.
He hasn't for years, since at least 1980s.
Voters without college degrees are voting Republican right now. It's true. In all exit polling since 2016, voters without college degrees are voting Republican, specifically for Donald Trump.
I don't know what that means. I'm not even going to try to delve into that demographic, but...
He then talked about trickle-down economics. I don't understand what fascination... Democrats are as fascinated with the idea and the term of trickle-down economics as all Republicans are with reincarnating the corpse of Ronald Reagan.
Well, I'll say it this way. Have you ever heard someone who just gets so upset when you bring up something that works?
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, Joe Biden, who was born in 1940-something.
Robinette. Back when we used Joseph, the name Robinette.
Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. III. Quote, I grew up in a home where not a lot trickled down on my dad's kitchen table. Trickle-down economics wasn't a thing when you were a kid. You were literally born into Franklin Delano Roosevelt's socialistic empire of the United States that he was trying to build. What are you talking about? What are you want to talk about the oil slicks next?
Sworn enemy of corn pop. This guy's got to figure it out.
Then, my favorite thing... is he said that he is vowing that we're going to finally beat Big Pharma. Are you guys the ones who are subsidizing the new COVID vaccine?
Okay.
I feel like you are.
I want to get to my...
Also, insulin
yeah.
is cheaper under President Trump than it is right now. Insulin, when President Trump was in office, was $10. It's now $35, and you're wanting to keep it at $35, which makes no sense. I'm gonna tee you up, because I know where you're going.
Yeah, I want to get to my favorite part.
There's an invasion at our southern border. There are wars in Europe and Israel. By the way, you cannot push for Israel's victory and then chide Israel for how they obtain it. So we got a two-front war, possibly a third one coming up. You're talking about saving seniors money. You're talking about prescriptions and blah, blah, blah. We're going to end with this because we have two other stories we need to get to, and we're already 20 minutes in.
They've given... Go ahead.
The president talked about bags of potato chips and Snickers bars for 10 minutes last night.
My favorite part of the speech.
On your credit card bills. They're charging you too much on late fees. Then pay them on time.
Remember last year it was baggage fees on...
Why is the president so focused on these issues that do not matter.
Ooh, pick me.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Have you ever had a kid that is just really excited, just hyperactive? Like, he wants to be a part of all the adult conversations, and there's a room full of adults. Maybe it's a slightly round room of adults, oval, like, and there are couches inside, and all the adults are talking, and this kid comes in, and he goes, hey, I think, you know, okay. And everyone's like, what are we going to do about the little boy who's really excited and wants to talk a lot? So they pull out a puzzle, like maybe 24 or 48 pieces. Got the big ones. It's the floor puzzle. And they put it out on the floor, and they say, all right, what should we name him? Joey. All right, Joey, put this puzzle together and show us when you're done. In other words, it's a pacifier. Yep. Leave us alone while we talk adult talk, and you do what kids do. Junk fees, potato chip bags, Snickers bars, baggage fees are his pacifier. Now, I could be wrong, but I imagine, if you will, that all the adults in the room are talking about the war in Ukraine, the war in
Israel,
in the potential war in Taiwan, the economy, the southern border crisis, all these things. By the way, the opioid crisis has just like gone, vanished. All these things, and Biden's like, hey, why don't you go put that puzzle together? Junk fees. So that's what, and when it comes to the writing of the State of the Union address, they're like, hopefully he doesn't bring it up when we talk about putting the speech together. And he's like, should we be talking about junk fees? And they're like, fine, we'll put it in. And we have the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, the most powerful person, man, in the free world, talking about, you remember that commercial with the Snicker bars? And you're getting like, he's recounting his research. I think he sat on his 1980s IBM ThinkPad and researched junk fees and 10% less on Snicker bars and all the area getting your Lay's potato chip bags. And we ought to be thanking that guy out there for that bill and that thing. And we pan to the guy,
to Bob Casey,
who's got a bill telling Lay's potato chip, stop putting so much air in your bags. It's the pacifier for little Joey, who can't talk adult talk. And it's sad.
Well, I mean, the simple fact is that's how capitalism goes. Instead of paying more for the product because of your high inflationary prices,
shrinkflation,
we're going to have to shrink down the size of things. And you know what? The American people are going to continue to buy it. Because we understand that that's how far our dollar goes now.
Was it Al Mohler this morning that talked about the effect of the dollar store? Yeah.
That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
He continued on, there's going to be a White House initiative on women's health research. My very basic question on that is, what is a woman? How can you research women's health if you don't know what a woman is? I could ask another question, but I won't.
Exactly.
What is a woman?
Exactly what kind of research and health are they going to be doing?
Right.
Okay.
So all of this is my favorite part. My favorite part is I want to provide an annual tax credit that will give Americans $400 a month for the next 2 years. Wait, where's that going to come from?
I teach a government class.
Where's that coming from?
For those of you that don't know, and yesterday we got to the bureaucracy, the executive branch, the bureaucracy, and then we talked about the national debt. The national debt is $34 trillion. Trillion with the T. Ladies and gentlemen, that's alarming. And he's talking about giving every American or every American family $400 a month for the next 2 years. You do the math on that, that's $4,800 a year. That's $9,600 for every American if it's every American, multiply that by 330 million. Justin, great point. Where the heck is that money coming from?
He'll tell you it's coming from those big businesses and big corporations need to pay their fair share.
Finally going to pay their fair share. They need
to pay 25% federal tax.
21?
No, 25? He said 25. 25, one quarter in taxes. That is insanity.
Mike Johnson, stellar performance to sit and be so quiet, Mr. Speaker. Mike Johnson last night, when he said that, and there were several times where he just leaned, if you're watching today, he just shakes his head. He looks like the grandfather looking at little Joey saying things like, that boy's just doing stupid again.
I'm just going to give everybody $400 a month or $400 a year for 2 years, whatever it is.
Do they have a tree in the backyard of the White House?
I don't know. I guess that's where. And then my favorite part, because he kept talking about sharing the wealth and how he's cut the federal deficit. He hasn't at all. He's ballooned it.
Oh,
and because it's continuing to go up. He then says, look, I'm a capitalist.
What? Like a Chinese Communist Party capitalist.
What does that mean? What, sir? I don't think you understand what we're talking about here.
He's a neo-capitalist.
He wants to raise the federal minimum wage. He wants to do all these things. It was a classic.
He's a socialist.
It was a classic socialist speech that plays to the leftist base of the party. If you thought Joe Biden would moderate in 2024, you were wrong. And here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Gloves are off. It's general election time. And if everyone's minds are pretty much made up as to who they're going to vote for, I don't think there's any question about that. But there are independents out there. Do they break for Bobby Kennedy? Do they break for a no labels candidate, whoever that may be?
Joe Manchin, Nikki Haley.
Joe
Cunningham.
Or do they break for Donald Trump? Because in my opinion, and this is actually an unbiased opinion in my estimation. No sensible, not beholden to party antics voter can look at that speech last night and listen to it and say, wow, you know what? This doddering old fool has my best interest at heart. He screamed and yelled, sort of, for over an hour.
He was hopped up.
And you could tell by the end, you started to see the wheels come off a little bit.
He was
coming down.
Sunsetting.
And it just wasn't good. One of the worst speeches we've ever seen in a State of the Union, which means that if you watch any MSNBC or CNN today, it was the best speech ever given, because that's what the party wants you to think. Really quick, two other stories we need to get to. Kathy Hochul, governor of New York, has sent 750 National Guard troops to the subways after a spate of violence. This from the New York Daily News. Hochul is deploying 750 members of the Guard and 250 state and MTA police officers to subway stations to inspect passengers' bags. Hochul said Wednesday, no one is heading to their job or to visit family or to go to a doctor's appointment should worry that the person sitting next to them possesses a deadly weapon. They shouldn't worry about whether someone's going to brandish a knife or a gun. Well, here's the thing. I don't understand why there are only two extremes for people like Kathy Hochul. It's either we don't keep criminals in jail at all, we turn them loose onto society, or, hey, we're going to search everything you got. Cavity search. Spread them. Like, that appears to be the only two lanes for people like Kathy Hochul.
When violent crimes in New York subways are up 45%, and you've got people who are dedicated subway riders, they've ridden the blank train for their entire life, and they're now like, I'll get an Uber, because obscene things are happening on subway platforms. And then once you get in the, what some people now are calling the death tube of the subway car, and you literally cannot get out until the next stop, and you've got people surrounding you, threatening your life, stealing your stuff without a, you don't even have a choice to defend yourself. Really, I think the reason why 750 National Guard members were brought in, and by all accounts, it's nearly two new police officers at every stop were brought in is because they're facing a multi-front war inside New York City. Mental health crisis, gang-related crimes, illicit and illegal drugs, truancy, school dropouts who are now filling the streets of New York and every other liberal-run town in America. Illegal border crossings. You say, what does that have to do with New York City? Glad you asked. Because they're busing these illegal immigrants, those that have come to our country illegally. They're busing them to cities like New York because these cities claimed that they were going to be, you remember what they called them? What did they call these cities?
Just sanctuary cities.
Oh, that's right. You have a safe haven as because all those mean cities, those mean states like Texas. Oh, and now they're like, wait, time out. We got a problem. And so they've invited this multi-front war. And you brought up something during show prep. It's almost like they want it to happen. I don't know.
We have to, well, number one, we have to keep the proles in line. And we have to feed them with sex and alcohol to keep them at bay, keep them satisfied. So they don't see what's really going on. But also at the same point, you know, we're going to step in. We're going to show you that we care just for a little while. And then we'll back off. We go across the pond. Last story of the day.
Is it going to get better?
No. Oh. Well, I don't know. I think I can unveil some hypocrisy here. France today has sealed its constitutional right to an abortion in the entire nation of France. France, you know, take it for what it's worth. But Emmanuel Macron said that France will not rest until promises kept throughout the world. It's this historic change was the sealing of a long battle for, quote, freedom, a fight made up of tears, tragedies, and broken destinies. Emmanuel Macron said the occasion was a reminder of, quote, the fate of generations of women deprived of the most intimate of choices, whether or not to have a child. The destiny of these women, their suffering, their fear, the addresses exchanged under the cloak of clandestine operations, of stifled cries, of impossible recoveries, of secrecy, suspicion, sermons of the risk of losing everything, one's happiness, and one's life. Yes, for too many years, women's destinies were sealed by others, their lives captured, their freedom scorned. Freedom to do what? Kill your child? Again, I want to make a note that France is on Constitution number, who knows, since the original French Revolution. And I want to make a point about the two revolutions. The American Revolution was birthed out of the idea that, you know, the British parliamentary form of government isn't bad. It's just, probably shouldn't have a monarch. Overall, we just believed in you need representation. I feel like the colonies weren't being represented, need representation, can't levy taxes if we don't have approval of it. And while, yes, there was bloodshed in the Revolution, in the Revolutionary War, newsflash, it wasn't a bloody revolution. It wasn't a bloody overthrow. The revolution in the United States returned a sense of morality, returned a sense of normalcy, of, in its very basic form, liberality. The French Revolution, however, was extremely bloody and is where we get the basis of our understanding of right and left. You had those on the right who were in favor of the monarchy, and you had those on the left who were not. And it was a bloody revolution that parlayed into moral insanity and a goal to have immorality or amorality become the norm in France. Now, France has enshrined the right to an abortion, I'm going to rephrase, the right to kill your child, into its constitution. I will also, really quick aside, want to say this. Every child deserves life from the moment of conception, fertilization, to the moment of natural death. To say that I believe otherwise without knowing my stance is a problem for me. And anyone who says that should probably retract that. Now, France has enshrined abortion into its constitution. However, Mitch, do you know I assume this would mean that France has abortion up until the moment of birth.
Probably not.
What would you say is probably their limit? 27 weeks?
I would say 20. Around the Roe.
14 weeks.
Because they brought up Roe, and believe
you
it or
can't,
not.
You can't have an abortion after 14 weeks in France. Now, I think that's too far. I don't think abortion should be allowed at any point at all.
But that's more conservative than the national standard here in America.
Certainly more so than the Roe v. Wade decision, more which, by the way, President Biden says he wants to reinstitute Roe. No, he doesn't. He wants to go further.
I'd argue it's probably more conservative than a quarter to a third of our states.
Correct. That is absolutely correct. And in fact, France, up until the recent heartbeat bill was upheld here in South Carolina, France had a more conservative view on abortion than the United States did. So is some of this a red herring? Sure. Sure. But it is a very serious matter. Ultimately, what happened in France, the pro-abortionists want that to happen here. A constitutional amendment. By the way, that's not going to happen here. It's going to take two-thirds of the states and two-thirds of the Congress. That's not going to happen. That will take decades. If it's going to happen, it will take decades. I don't believe it will. We have an extremely high bar when it comes to constitutional amendments. France doesn't have a high bar on really anything other than their baguettes. So that's not going to happen here in the meantime, but we do need to understand, those of us who are part of the the pro-life movement, understand that we have a significant hill still to climb, in that we're pushing back against the push. We're defending against the push that would see America in the same way that France sees itself now.
I want to say something to all of you out there who call yourself pro-life or who maybe argue that palmetto family is not pro-life enough. Our position at Palmetto Family is to see an end to the heinous act of abortion. That is our position. How we get there is a difficult road to drive. We cannot end abortion in the state of South Carolina or as a nation overnight. It is not only, at this point, culturally infeasible, it is politically impossible. And so we do what we can while we can. And for all of you out there that say that's not the right response, that's not good enough, I understand. Our position at Palmetto Family is to support the strongest piece of pro-life legislation that is politically viable at the time. And I know what you're saying. Some of you out there are saying, but if you would all get behind this, it could happen. We are for supporting the most strongly worded, aggressive pro-life legislation that is politically viable at the time. We were strong proponents, to the dismay of many, of supporting the Human Life Protection Act, and fell, to be honest, sadly short in the state Senate. We're not done. We're going to continue to fight. For all of you out there who have said, oh, the pro-life movement, they're done in South Carolina now that we got the heartbeat bill. No, we're going to keep coming back. We're going to keep fighting for more. Because we believe that every child, inside and outside of their mother's womb, should be protected. And every woman who has an abortion has the opportunity to experience the grace and love of Jesus Christ. They need post-abortive care. They need the saving knowledge of a Savior who loves them. And the church needs to do its job on all those fronts. We need your help. I'm not preaching at you, to you. I'm telling you that you have the opportunity to join in the fight, to get involved, and many of you are. And for that, we are extremely grateful. Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have on the program today. Appreciate you joining us. Again, another State of the Union recap.
Woo!
So we'll move on from this day and look ahead to next week. We're going to be joined by Representative Speaker Pro Tem Tommy Pope on the show on Monday. Again, those are audio only. We're audio only Mondays and Wednesdays. So make sure you go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you choose to peruse your shows. You can catch us there on Mondays and Wednesdays, and of course here on Facebook and YouTube on our Friday edition. So until next week, for Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Enjoy your weekend. This has been another riveting episode of the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina, the Palmetto Family Matters Show.